One of the major themes found in Parshas Emor is the discussion of the holidays, of the different yontivs that the Jewish people celebrate. The time that we call the Mikra Kodesh, the days of Kedusha, the days that are set aside for holiness. It's very fascinating to note, and this is the issue I'd like to try to Mirta Shem work on today, that as the introduction to this particular section, which goes through in detail Pesach, Sfir Saomer, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, as well as Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret, at the introduction of this section, in the beginning of the 23rd chapter, the Torah tells us the following. God spoke to Moshe, telling him to speak to the Israelites and to say to them, there are special times that you must celebrate as sacred holidays to God. The following are my special times. At this point, we would have anticipated the beginning of the list, starting with Pesach. Instead, we find the following verse, which is a verse which we will deal with today, which a lot of the commentators deal with. And the verse says, you may do work during the 6 weekdays, but Shabbat is a Shabbat of Shabbats. It's a sacred holiday to God. We shall do no work. Wherever you may live, it is God's Shabbat. And then the next verse are, these are the God's festivals that you must celebrate as sacred holidays at the appropriate time, and begins the afternoon of the 14th day of the first month, the time that you must sacrifice God's Passover offering. So the clear question that's asked, and it's the question which Rashi immediately asked, is why is the subject of Shabbat put here next to the subject of the festival? We have a great introduction where the Torah tells us that these are the special times that we must celebrate as sacred holidays to God. And then, instead of beginning as we would have anticipated with Pesach, we begin with Shabbat. And the obvious question is, as the footnote on the new article Rashi notes, that we cannot say that Shabbat falls within the category of festivals. For the verse says to them that you are to designate as callings of holiness, the Mikra Kodesh, which we spoke about, which implies that they are fixed by man. This holds true of the festivals, for they are set in terms of the day of the month, which depends upon the court's declaration of the new moon. Shabbat, on the other hand, is in no sense designated by man, for it is set in terms of the days of the week, the immutable cycle of which was put into effect at the time of creation, and which man has no say. So obviously the question is, if Shabbat is clearly not connected with a festival, the festivals are Mikra Kodesh, those days which we're able to call holy, those days that we're able to decide with a court of law based on viewing the new moon when the calendar is to be set, when the holidays are to fall out. If those are Mikra Kodesh, if those are the holidays that we can call holy, that the initiative is in the hands of man, clearly there's no connection with Shabbat, which is Kviya V'Kayama, which has been established since the beginning of time. Shabbat rests on the seventh day, and likewise we rest every seventh day, no matter where we are, no matter where the moon is. So what is the connection between Shabbos and the Moadim? Why is Shabbos placed here at the beginning of the list of the festivals when clearly Shabbos falls into its own category? So Rashi, in trying to explain this, says, L'lamdecha, to teach you, Shekol mechalel et ha-moadot, that whoever desecrates the festivals, Ma'alin alav, is considered ki'ilu chilel to Shabbatot, as if he desecrated the Shabbat days. V'chol makayim et ha-moadot, and whoever upholds the festivals, Ma'alin alav, is considered ki'ilu kileim et ha-Shabbatot, as if he upheld the Shabbat days. Rashi is explaining on a very technical level that although Shabbat has a much stricter punishment in the hands of the court of law down here below, that a person who desecrates Shabbat on purpose with witnesses, etc., would get skilah, would get stoning, and to mechalel tamoadot, and to desecrate a yantif, is a far less greater offense punished by the court of law down here, that in terms of God viewing it up above in heaven, they both have the same amount of severity, and one should understand that, and therefore not to be so light in regard to one's observance of the festivals. The observance of the festivals should be treated with the same severity as the observance of the Shabbat. we nevertheless need to understand perhaps a little bit more deeper what is Rashi hinting at on a more conceptual level. That one who desecrates the festivals is as if he's desecrated the Shabbat, and one who upholds the festivals as if he's upheld the Shabbat. This is our major question for today. The question of the relationship and interrelationship between Shabbos and the festivals, and how we to understand the dynamics of both. I'd like to as well, within our discussion, touch on the concept of what the festivals are about as well. If the major essence of the parsha is the discussion of the festivals, I'd like to try to briefly see, can we pinpoint perhaps one major theme within each festival, and perhaps a larger theme that we can interconnect between the festivals as well. There are quite a number of approaches to answering our question of the placement of Shabbos at the beginning of the list of the festivals. Perhaps very briefly, two approaches which really reflect a mindset before we enter into one major approach that we will take today. On the level of Drush, on the level clearly not of Pshat, is the level of the Vilna Gaon, who explains that the 6 days may be construed to mean not the 6 days of the week, but the 6 festivals of the Jewish year, and which according to the law, work connected with the preparation of food is permitted. And these are the first and last days of Passover, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, and the first and last days of Sukkot, which according to biblical law are only 1 day. So accordingly, verse 3, 6 days work shall be done, is a reference to there are 6 holidays in which all work connected with the preparation of food may be done. But the 7th day is the Shabbat of Shabbats, the 7th day is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, on which work connected with the preparation of food is forbidden. So in understanding it this way, what the Vilna Gaon is doing, what the Gra is doing, is saying that we're not dealing with the Shabbat that we are familiar with, but rather this is a general statement and a reference to all the holidays. That there's a clear difference between the holidays where you're allowed to do a certain amount of cooking for the holiday, while the Shabbat of all Shabbats, the Day of Atonement, one is not permitted to do this. A second approach, which perhaps fits in with the conceptual idea that we're going to try to develop today, is found in Rabbi Kanitevsky's book, Night of Watching, where he speaks about that the major theme of all the festivals, on one level, is connected with the agriculture. As we know, the whole economy at that time, if really exclusively, was dependent upon the agriculture. And this is to direct man to recognize that despite man's genius and despite his effort and toil and technical advance in agriculture, it is the will of God that is finally responsible for the produce of the earth. Hence, we have the Omer on Passover, the special loaves of bread on Shavuos, the 4 species on Sukkot. They all have the very same message, that the blessing of God comes, the blessing of the land is a blessing of God. And we celebrate the festivals to express this basic idea. And this is a notion that can so easily be overlooked precisely because of man's total involvement in this work. And what is the major idea? From where do we learn this idea that we're completely dependent on God? And no matter how much we think it's our own efforts, or it's our own initiative, it's our own technical advancement that we are successful, this is clearly the message of Shabbos. But the message of Shabbos, more than anything else, teaches us that God created the world and that all the laws of nature are finally dependent upon God and His will. Food comes from the physical or chemical interaction of heaven and earth, and it can also come in the absence of all this. So therefore, it's very clear that before enumerating the various festivals which represent the celebration of the seasonal cycle and which expresses the idea that all this is the will of God, to whom we give thanks for the produce and the bounty of the earth, the Torah should once again set down the source of this whole notion, the Shabbat day. Accepting the Shabbat is a prerequisite which makes all the festivals meaningful. Therefore, at the head of the seasonal cycle of festivals stands the Shabbat, which by virtue of its message transcends all seasons and all natural cycles. This is the key of what Shabbat is about. For conceptually, what the Torah is telling us is that before you can even speak about the festival, before you can even speak about the whole concept of what the festivals are trying to teach us, how agriculturally we're so dependent on God, we first have to set up as the basic premise that we are totally dependent on God. God is the creator of the world, and we need to understand this, and we need to really imbue ourselves with this philosophical principle before we can approach what the festivals are about. Hence, the Shabbat heads the list before we get into the festivals. I think we can take this idea that the Shabbat has to be here as a prerequisite before we can begin the festivals and try to understand a little bit more deeply the interconnection between the Shabbat and the festivals. Not only is Shabbat setting up for us the basic premise that we need to understand philosophically, but there's a much deeper interconnection between Shabbat and the festivals, that Shabbat has to head the list and be, so to speak, the powerhouse in order to really be able to celebrate the festivals. And this idea is really echoed in an essay of the Or Gedayahu, Rav Gedayah Shor. The Or Gedayahu notes that you really have within our parsha three major topics which can be found under the rubrics of the three aspects of Kedusha, the three aspects of holiness, in the aspect of Olam, Shana, and Nefesh, in the aspect of the world, in the aspect of time, and the aspect of person. The beginning of the parsha deals with the Kedusha HaNefesh, which is the aspect of the individual themselves are holy, whether it's the beginning of the parsha of the holiness of the priests. And we know, as the Torah tells us, the Kiddush Tov, that it's a commandment on the Jewish people to make sure and to ensure this holiness of the priest, and to be L'Kadesh Et HaKohen, to really give sanctity with appropriate respect to the Kohen, as well as the major mitzvah found in our parsha, very important mitzvah, of Nikdashti B'Toch B'nei Yisrael, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, where every Jew is commanded to sanctify God's name. This is the aspect of Nefesh, the Kedusha, the holiness of the soul, the holiness of the body. The second part of the parsha, he says, is the Kedusha of the Shana, the Kedusha of time, which is clearly the Moadei Hashem, the festivals of God, that we create that holiness. And as well, he says, this is the aspect of Shabbos, because Shabbos is clearly also the ability to take time and to sanctify it and to elevate it. And the end of the parasha deals with different smaller topics which he connects to the world of Olam, the world of space. But in regard to Shabbat, says the Or Gedayahu, he says that Shabbat is the Kedusha HaKolela B'Tocha and Kedusha HaMoadi. That it's not only a question that Shabbat is placed here because we're dealing with the Kedusha, the aspect of sanctity of time, which is clearly the manifestation of Shabbat, but it's much deeper than that. Within Shabbat, we have found the entire Kedusha, the entire holiness of all the Moadim, of all the festivals, is found within the Kedusha, within the holiness of Shabbat. And it's this idea that Shabbat is the powerhouse of the Moadim, of the festivals, that I'd like to try to examine. The point of introduction, we need to understand that there are really three major aspects of Shabbos. And in understanding the three major aspects of Shabbos, we can then appreciate how each one of these aspects of Shabbos is connected to one of the major three festivals, to Pesach, to Shavuos, as well as to Sukkot. In Rabbi Munk's book, The World of Prayer, he notes what these three aspects of Shabbos are about. And he says they really can be found within the three prayers. This is really based on the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, in the name of Rabbi Kolonimus, the three prayers that are found in our Shabbat davening, as well as within these themes that are found within Kiddush. On Friday night, we know that on Friday night, on Shabbat, we have seven major blessings within our Shemona Esrei. the first three and the last three, which are consistent with the entire year. And the seventh, the middle blessing, is something specific to the theme of the Shabbos, or to the theme of the holiday. So on Friday night, that middle paragraph, that seventh blessing, deals with Vayichulu, deals with the aspect that God is the one who created the world. And on Friday night, our focus, davening as well as in the Kiddush, is the focus on God as the creator of the world, the concept of the seventh day being the day of creation. And that's why we stand for the first part of Kiddush, at least minimally, to be a witness, to testify that God is indeed the one who created the world and rested on the seventh day. That is the theme of Friday night. It's the theme of creation. It's the theme of what Shabbat is all about, why we celebrate Shabbat, to testify and to really understand that God is the creator of the world, and on Shabbat, the seventh day, God rested. If that's the theme of Friday night, the theme of the Shabbat day, beginning with the bracha of Yismach Moshe b'matnat chalko, that Moshe is happy with the portion that was given to him, and the v'shamru b'nei Yisrael to Shabbos, and the Jewish people accepting the Shabbat, is referring to the giving of the law. It's dedicated to the Shabbat as revealed in God's law. So the theme of Shabbos day, the theme in Kiddush, the theme in davening, is the theme of revelation. It's the time when we receive the Torah. Friday night is creation. Shabbat day is revelation. And finally, the tefillah that is recited during the mincha service of Atah Achad v'Shimcha Achad, God is one and your name will be one, is really anticipating the future when God will be one and his name will be one. So therefore we find that we have three aspects to Shabbos: creation, revelation, and anticipation of the future, the messianic times. And it's interesting to note that there's really an interrelationship between these three themes. Rabbi Munk continues by explaining the very famous Medrash that the Shabbos day came before God and said, you know, God, for every day you created a partner. And it's a very difficult Medrash to understand, has to be understood on many levels. But on the most simplistic level, the Shabbos is saying, look, the first day has a partner called the second day, and the third day has a partner called the fifth day, and the fifth day has a partner called the sixth day. But here, I'm created on the seventh day, and I have no partner. And what that aspect of partnership is about, being completed by, being sustained by, needs to be further examined. But again, on a simplistic level, Shabbat says, I am left all by myself. I have nobody to complete me. I have nobody to give me a sense of completion, a sense of fulfillment, to which God has responded. I have yet another work to create, the people of Israel. And Israel, the eighth work of my creation, shall be betrothed. Yisrael Yehe Ben Zukcha. Therefore, when God revealed his law on Mount Sinai, he said to the people of Israel, behold, the Shabbat stands there forsaken and forgotten. Therefore, be you the ones to remember her and to sanctify her, as a bridegroom hallows his bride unto himself. And that's what the Medrash says. So on Mount Sinai, the Shabbat of creation was wedded to the people of Israel, and thereby became the Shabbat of Israel, so to remain until it become the universal Shabbat, on that day when the Lord will be one and his name one. So we find here very clearly that the Friday night, the night of creation, stood by itself as if, until the aspect of revelation came, when we received the Torah, we wedded the Friday night aspect, and this union stands together until ultimately we will have the completed aspect of the union when the whole world will recognize the oneness of God. It's very fascinating that this explains the custom that's found in the Magen Avraham, which says the following, that if you take a look at the end of the blessing, in this paragraph, it's almost verbatim, word for word, except for one minute change. And that is in describing the menucha, the rest of Shabbat. On Friday night, it says, Ve'inuchu va. It uses Shabbat in the feminine form. The same prayer said during Shabbat morning uses the masculine form, Vayenuchu Vo. And the same prayer recurs in the Mincha service, and the plural is used, Vayenuchu Vam. Friday night, the feminine, Shabbos day, the masculine, and the plural on Saturday afternoon, Shabbat afternoon. And he says his practice is explained as follows. The Shabbat of creation, which we celebrate on Friday evening, is still female, as it were, incomplete, since its true purpose is still unfulfilled. She is therefore condemned to remain in a passive state until, by virtue of the Shabbat of revelation, to which the Shabbat morning service is dedicated, she becomes betrothed to Israel, who weds the Shabbat bride, thus activating the ideals with which the Shabbat embodies, and making the Shabbat fruitful for both Israel and mankind. So it's as if the Jewish people wed the Shabbat queen, and the feminine aspect, which is standing past in a passive level on Friday night, is able to bond together with the active aspect of Shabbos day of the Jewish people. And ultimately, we look forward to when the bond will eventually serve to bring about the long-awaited time, and this is the plural form, Vayinu Chuvam, when you will have the full aspect of the union between these two components. It says, by virtue of the cycle and conclusion, as represented by the three principal prayer services, the Shabbat reflects the world as seen by Judaism, an orderly sequence of past, present, and future, first the creation of the world, then the divine revelation, and finally the redemption of all mankind. This is what we need as a basis to understand how Shabbat forms within it all the other holidays. That Shabbat has within it the three major components of creation, of revelation, and of the anticipation of the messianic times. These three components form the bedrock of what the other festivals are about. And this is what we need to understand, the connection and the interrelationship between these three. And this is what the Mechilta in Shmot, the Medrash, explains when the Medrash says, if you are worthy of keeping the Shabbat, then God will give you three festivals, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Shabbos has within them, Shabbos, the point of Achdus, the point of unity, contains within them all three aspects of the other festivals. Let's try to explain how. The first holiday that the Torah mentions is Pesach. One of the themes of Pesach, which I'd like to focus in on very briefly now, is the theme, which is a major theme of Pesach, the theme of time. We know that our rabbis teach us that the Jewish people had descended to the 49th level of impurity. And it's known that had God not taken us out very, very quickly, we would have fallen into the 50th level of impurity. And he says, Rabbi Tatzin, living inspired, the problem with more time in Egypt would not have been the contaminating effects of Egyptian impurity. That danger had long since ceased. No, the problem with more time in Egypt would have been more time itself. He says, let's try to understand. The redemption had to occur keheref ayin, in the blink of an eye, because the alacrity is necessary for an event to remain spiritual. Had we left Egypt slowly, naturally, in a relaxed fashion, we would have been a natural people. The Jewish nation was being born then. The moment of birth had to be transcendent because, as we know, everything goes after the beginning. We became and remain a spiritual people because our beginning was spiritual. Our moment of formation occupied the absolute minimum of time. And since then, we have lived on the edge of the physical universe, at the edge which interfaces with the transcendent, the divine. The terrible danger of more time in Egypt would have been the time itself. That is the impurity that is meant here, and this is the secret of Pesach. Riding the wave of minimum time, overriding time, we left Egypt too fast for the natural to take effect, too fast to be in danger of becoming slowed by friction with the natural world. And that's why the essence of Pesach is represented by matzah. The difference between matzah and chametz, it's the same ingredients, is the aspect of time. So we see here that a major focus of Pesach is the aspect that God came down and had to redeem us quickly to teach us the importance of time, the importance of being above the natural order, the ability to transcend and to live on that edge with the transcendent component with this aspect of the divine. This aspect of Pesach is very much connected, says the Or Gedaliah of Gedaliah Shur Zatzal, with a Friday night with Shabbat. The aspect of this Zrizus, the aspect of being able to transcend time, the aspect of going Lamala Min HaTeva, above Seder HaTeva, above the natural order, that the Kedusha of Pesach, the holiness of Pesach, is the aspect of transcending time. And he says this is the secret of Friday night. The secret of Friday night, the Koach Hazeh Yishkam Shabbat, this is a secret found in Shabbat. HaKoach Sha'adam Yachol B'Rega Achad Likanes B'Tocha Shabbat. In one moment a person can enter Shabbat. Shemafsik Miskei Melacha V'Shuva B'Nachat HaShabbat. V'Zeu HaKoach Sheyesh B'Chol Ish Yehudi Lazbiat Atzmo B'Rega. What is the beauty of Shabbat? And we all have experienced this. The beauty of Shabbat is within a moment we transcend the natural work week and we enter into a domain of complete holiness. The entire environment, the entire atmosphere changes. I think each and every one of us has experienced this, I bet even on a weekly level, where there is a tremendous, what we call, era of Shabbat frenzy. This has to get done and baths have to be taken and clothes, Shabbat clothes have to be put on, and the food has to be set up, and everything has to get done. And there's a zillion last-minute things. And the house is on a pitch which is higher than the entire week put together. And suddenly, the moment comes when we light the Friday night candles, and what happens? Tranquility, peace descend upon the house. The ability in one moment, the moment before is filled with frenzy, the next moment has this aspect of Kedusha, has this aspect of holiness. That transition of the one moment is the aspect of what makes Shabbos so special. It's the aspect of being able to enter into the time zone that changes the entire persona of the individual as well as the environment of the house. It's the model in Shir HaShirim Rabba of that tarnagola, of that chicken who's filled with dirt and grime and is just wallowing in this muck, and suddenly it just flutters its wings and all of the dirt flies away. This is what we say, Hinari me'afar kumik, awaken yourself from the dust and get up. Take away the whole work week, throw it off aside, the world of nature, and be able to embrace that supernatural aspect of time, where the Jew is able to enter in to the special aspect of the holiness of Shabbat. And this, as he explains, is what the Medrash means when God says, I have a wonderful present hidden in my storehouse, and Shabbat is its name. Says to Gedaliah, it doesn't mean that every week God takes this Shabbat out of his storehouse and gives it to Israel. No. Rather, every week the Jewish people enter into God's storehouse, and this is the aspect of Shabbos. And he says this aspect of Shabbos, Ki Kedusha Slow Shabbos, Ki Kedusha Shabbos Breishis. This aspect of the holiness of Friday night is the holiness that's connected with the Shabbos of creation. The holiness, Shi Kviya V'Kayama, the holiness which is immutable by time. It's the ability of the Jew to connect himself to that Kedusha, to that holiness that God fixed in the world at the beginning of creation. And it's this aspect of holiness that the Jew is able to enter into. This is the aspect of holiness, the ability to really transcend time, which is the aspect of the chipazon, of the haste where the Jewish people left on Pesach night. Friday night is the time where God takes the initiative as established this time to be holy. We enter into this time. God, so to speak, embraces us with this time, that when Shabbat enters, God puts upon us this aspect of the holiness of time. And this concept where we can transcend the natural and enter into the supernatural, so to speak, enter into this aura of time, is really the theme of Pesach. the theme of transcending time, the theme of what the Jewish people is about, where we have to start our nationhood being able to transcend time, being able to work with this alacrity. This is the theme of Friday night. This is the theme of the Shabbos of creation. This is the theme of Pesach, the theme of time, and the theme of holiness. And hence, Shabbos therefore becomes the powerhouse of Pesach. If you understand the message of Shabbos, the message of being able to enter into a time above and beyond the natural, then you can appreciate and be able to have the spiritual energy of Pesach, which is the same concept. To be able to transcend, Shavuos, on the other hand, responsibility and the preparation, Sfiras HaOmer, really falls in our hands. As Rabbi Dessler points out, in centuries and time, on Shavuos we have to work in order to receive the Torah. We have to struggle to acquire it in our hearts. We have to appreciate its truth. And it was only when they heard God's voice at Sinai was doubt replaced by absolute certainty. So too, when we learn Torah today, and especially at Shavuot time, can we, if we wish, still hear the same voice? But he continues, we may hear God's voice, but we still have to absorb its message. The one sure means of absorbing it is to want to absorb it. As he gives the example, you can coax a kid to eat food, but he cannot be forced to eat it. And as a last resort, he can spit it out. Similarly, accumulation of Torah in the mind without willing acceptiveness in the heart can be dangerous, and it's a situation that can lead to rejection and rebellion. And it says this explains the statement of our rabbis that Torah can be life-giving and it can also be lethal. How so? So Rava explains the following. It is life-giving to those who approach it with their right hand, and it's poisonous to those who approach it with their left. The right-handed approach, explains Rashi, means to delve into it with all one's strength, to be concerned with discovering its secrets. A person's main strength lies in his right hand. From this it follows that the left-hand approach is a half-hearted approach, where one's interest is not fully engaged. And this half-hearted approach is dangerous, because it can lead, God forbid, to rejection of the Torah. The way to acquire Torah, therefore, is to learn it in depth, with excitement and a sense of discovery. And this way we will learn to appreciate the sweetness of Torah, and this will penetrate the obtuseness of our hearts. And once we have absorbed Torah into our being, this light will be able to cast away the darknesses in the recesses of our hearts. Shavuos is really the Srusa Dilatata Sfiras HaOmer. Shavuos is the awakening of man, where we need to take the initiative and we need to be able to accept the Torah not only on an intellectual level but on an emotional, spiritual level as well. And this is clearly connected to the second aspect of Shabbos. The second aspect of Shabbos, the aspect of revelation, the time when Torah itself was given, as we know, on Shabbos, is clearly connected to the holiday of Shavuos. And while Friday night is the awakening of God of above, Shabbos day, the acceptance of the Torah, the revelation at Mount Sinai, is clearly the Srusa Dilatata, the awakening of man. While Friday night, as we spoke about, is the feminine, is the passive state, Shabbos day is the masculine, it's the active state where the Jewish people have to embrace the receiving of the Torah, and by so doing, embrace the concept of Shabbos, that we become the partner to God. And therefore, well, Friday night, God uplifts us, and God brings us to this high spiritual level. We just enter into Shabbos, time-wise, and boom, Kedusha, holiness, descends upon us. The Shabbos day really reflects, the Shavuos experience reflects our concerted effort that we need to put in to make the experience a positive experience, that we're able to appreciate the Kedusha of Shabbos, to appreciate the aspect of what Shabbos is about. Just add parenthetically that the Or Gedaliah notes that Shabbos is on a much deeper level connected with Shavuos in terms of Shabbos has the aspect of the first luchos of the first tablets. And we know that had we been able to retain those first tablets, any Torah that we would have learned, we would not have forgotten. And he says that's the bracha of Shabbos, that any learning of Torah that a person does on Shabbos is a blessing that a person won't forget such Torah, because the Torah on Shabbos connects us to the original receiving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. If Friday night is creation, if Friday night is the initiative of God, Shabbos day is the revelation, the initiative of man, where on Shabbos day the theme is the receiving of the Torah, and this is the aspect of what Shavuos is all about, so then the Mincha time connects ourselves to Sukkot. What is the major aspect of Sukkot? So it's interesting, we say in the Ma'ariv prayer a very beautiful sentence. We ask God that He should be Poreis Sukkah Shalom Aleinu, that the Sukkah of peace should be spread over us. And He explains, what does this mean? So He says a Sukkah, Rav Dessler explains that a Sukkah is essentially a temporary residence. It vividly reminds us that the whole of this world is nothing but a temporary abode. All material pleasures and successes are transient, and our dreams of establishing ourselves in an unassailable position in this world are nothing but fantasy. He says everyone knows this intellectually, even in the non-Jewish world, on occasion reminds itself that you can't take it with you. And what you are is more important than what you have. And he said maybe this is why God chooses the mitzvah of Sukkah, with which to test the Gentiles when Messiah comes. But the meaning of Sukkah is in their minds only and not in their hearts. As soon as they experience difficulty in keeping the mitzvah, when God puts out a tremendous heat, each one kicks over Sukkah and departs. The inner spark is missing. And he says it's much deeper than that. Sukkah is not only the aspect of the material pleasures and successes are transient. He says the Sukkah of peace is connected with the clouds of glory that were surrounded the Jewish people in the desert. We know that's one of the reasons why we have a Sukkah, to remind us of these clouds of glory. And we know the clouds of glory are connected to the personality of Aaron, in whose merits we have these clouds of glory, who's the individual who personifies the aspect of loving peace and pursuing peace. Rav Dessler combines all these ideas together so beautifully by stating that all these symbols flow together. Sukkah deflates the importance of material affluence and so-called economic security in this world. This is a Sukkah principle. So long as people ignore this and make material success the be-all and end-all of all existence, there can be no peace in the world. In such a society, people covet each other's possessions, and the very fact that one person has something makes the other feel that he has less. And he said the same applies to nations on the world scale. The Sukkah principle, if internalized, turns people towards spiritual goals. When the members of a society strive together for the things of the spirit, the success of one's benefits all, envy and hatred are banished, and peace reigns supreme. And this is why Aaron, the high priest, is the man of spirit, is also the man of peace. And this is the aspect that the clouds of glory, which indicate God's presence, have the power to form a tabernacle of peace over all of Israel and eventually over all mankind. This is the third aspect, the aspect of Sukkot. Sukkot is very much connected with the time of the future. Sukkot, the time when the war of Gog and Magog, the final war, will happen. Sukkot is the time when we are able to understand the Sukkah principle, the time of peace and tranquility, where the whole world will be, so to speak, under this Sukkah, this protection of God, these clouds of glory, where the envy and the greed and the different disputes among people will dissipate completely, and there will reign spiritual goals and this relationship of peace and harmony within this world. The third aspect is Shabbos. The third aspect of Shabbos, which is the union of the Jewish people with receiving of the Torah and the creation. It's the time where we look forward to, where God's name is one his whole essence is what Sukkot is about, the Sukkah of peace, the Sukkah of tranquility. And it's interesting that Rav Dessler notes that the Sukkah principle can be realized by dint of hard struggle, by vanquishing the Yetzer Hara in battle after battle, until one experiences in one's own life the reality of the spirit and the transience of material things. And many people come to this the hard way, where after having financial loss or experiencing different traumas in one's life, one experiences and one understands the importance of the spiritual over the material. He says it can also be won by grasping the thoughts which are sent into one's mind by the grace of the Almighty. And if you think about these thoughts, you're able to arouse oneself away from the vanity of the material world and into the desirability of the spiritual attainment. And he says, and this is what we're speaking about, that if Friday night is the impetus of God and Shabbat day is the impetus of man, Shabbat afternoon is the combination of both. One can achieve the Sukkah principle, A, through one's own hard effort that one comes to this realization, or B, sometimes we get these little thoughts that flitter through our mind, which tells us these little hints that God gives us in our lives, hello, there are things that are more important than the way we're spending our lives. Wake up and smell the coffee. And therefore, the Shabbat afternoon, this message of the tranquility and peace, have as its components both the awakening of below as well as the awakening of above. And therefore, what the Orgadayahu is saying is a very beautiful concept. He's saying is that Shabbat and the three aspects of Shabbos are really connected thematically with the three aspects of the festivals. Friday night, Pesach, going beyond the dimension of time, awakening from God, the feminine. Shabbat day, the aspect of the revelation, masculine, we take the initiative, we are able to embrace the Torah and thereby embrace the Shabbat. And Shabbat afternoon is the combination, the union of the two, the ability to see that ultimate time of Sukkot, that ultimate time of peace and tranquility that will fill the world. The final note, the Orgadayahu explains that this is perhaps one of the reasons why we're told to eat three meals on Shabbat, because the three meals on Shabbat really embody the three major festivals. And it's therefore no accident that our rabbis say that one who eats and is careful to eat the third meal of Shabbat, the Shal Shittis, is going to be saved, Mechevle Mashiach, is going to be saved from the difficult times of the Messianic era. The three meals on Shabbat represent for us the three festivals, and the keeping and observing each time of Shabbat separately allows us to focus in on each aspect of the three festivals. I think we can take this idea of the interrelationship between passivity and taking initiative one step further, and this perhaps gives us even a deeper understanding of why Shabbos is found at the head of the list of the festivals. And this is an idea found in the Shlomo Rebbe Zatzal in the Nitziv of Shalom, where he says that although, as we begin with, Shabbos is Kviyah V'Kayama, it's established by God, and does not have the initiative of the people to decide when Shabbat is, there is, however, as we've spoken about, a major aspect of Shabbos where the Jewish people themselves have to create the Shabbat environment. Although Shabbat is a gift from above, in order to really fully appreciate Shabbos, there has to have a component of Mikra Kodesh. There has to have a component where the Jewish people are actively involved in creating the Shabbos environment. And this is the key of what Shabbos is about. This is as Shabsosai Tishmoru, you shall keep my Sabbath, plural. There are two aspects of Shabbos. There's the aspect of Shabbos of Friday night, where the initiative is God, but there's also the aspect of Shabbos day, where we need to take this experience of holiness and godliness and to create the Shabbos experience in our own lives. Whether it's the preparation before Shabbos, whether it's our prayers on Shabbos, whether it's our mindset on Shabbos, we need to be able to take the Shabbos experience and actively put it into our lives, make it part of us. And that's why the Be'er Avraham explains, we say in our prayers, Yismechu b'machusecha on Shabbos day. We rejoice in your kingship, Shomrei Shabbos, those who keep the Shabbos, the Koreonik, and who call it a delight. And then we say, Am Mikadshei Shvi, the nation which sanctifies the seventh day. Ah, how do we sanctify the seventh day? Is it not sanctified by God? No. This is what we're speaking about. Yes, it's an aspect where God sanctifies it. But there is an aspect of Am Mikadshei Shvi, we say on Shabbos day. There's an aspect of Shabbos where we ourselves have to take this opportunity and sanctify it. And this is why Shabbos is placed by the festivals, because there's a component of the festivals which is found in Shabbos. The component of the festivals, which is clearly the initiative of mankind, has to be connected with Shabbos, which explains so beautifully now. When the verse says, these are my special times and you must celebrate as sacred holidays to God, the Mikra Kodesh, and we know Mikra Kodesh means the initiative of man, how can we then speak about Shabbos next? But that's the whole point. And we're trying to teach us that what Shabbos is all about is Shabbos is about Mikra Kodesh. So we have to create within Shabbos this aspect of Yontif where man needs to take initiative. That you can't think that Shabbos is going to come and I'll be spiritual. What are you doing to make the Shabbos experience the spiritual experience? And that's what Rashi means. That one who whoever desecrates the festivals is considered as if he desecrated the Shabbat days. Yes, because if you desecrate the festivals, you've desecrated the essence of what Shabbos is all about. Because the whole essence of festivals comes from the powerhouse of Shabbos. If you're not going to appreciate the festivals, it's really a reflection that you're not appreciating the Shabbos. And whoever upholds the festivals is considered as if he upheld the Shabbat days. This is a reference perhaps to the second level. Whoever upholds the concept of festivals, the concept of the initiative of man, is really upholding the Shabbos. How do you make Shabbos a real Shabbos? By taking the concept of festivals, the concept of the initiative of man, and introducing this into the festivals. That Shabbos has to have a component of the initiative of man. And I think this final level, that we need to take initiative within the Shabbat day, is really a key spiritual message, very practical for our lives. I'd like to conclude with living inspired by Rabbi Tatz, where he says, talking about Sfiras HaOmer, we do not wait for events to happen to us, for the uplift and blessing of the season and their holiness to come to us. We must build those things. We do not remain stationary in time as it washes over us. We must move forward actively to greet those great moments. The mystics say that if one waits for holiness, it may be long delayed. One must go toward it, then it rushes toward the seeker. In the dimension of space, we find this on the major festivals. We go toward the holy temple. Aliyah LaRegel, we ascend to the Beis HaMikdash. The mystics had a custom of going out into the fields to greet the Shabbat. We say, Likrat Shabbat, Lechu v'Nechad, to greet the Shabbat, let us go. Shabbat, the center of Kedusha, of holiness and time, must be sought, must be approached, must be moved toward. That is the only way for it to be Mekor HaBracha, the source of blessing. You want to know the secret of Shabbos? Yes, Shabbos is going to come Friday night. But you want to know how you're going to appreciate Shabbos? It's the message of Shabbos day, of the acceptance of the Torah. It's the message of the initiative of man. It's Likrat Shabbos Lechu v'Nelcha, to go out toward the Shabbos, to go greet the Shabbos queen, to walk to our doors on Friday night. You know, the custom of turning around Bo'i Kala and Shul. Why do we turn around in Shul Bo'i Kala? We're turning toward the door. We turn toward the door of the Shul. It's not only to the back of the Shul. Wherever the door of the shul is, we turn to the door of our house. We go to the door. Physically, people walk toward the door in the shul, in the house, and go out and greet the Shabbos queen. That's what it's about. It's not just physically turning around. Take a couple of steps forward. Shabbos, those steps forward is about what Shabbos is about. It's about taking an active side from our part to make Shabbos integrally part and parcel of our lives. You know what spirituality is all about? Spirituality is about not just waiting for it to happen. Not just saying, well, if I learn Torah, I'll be a spiritual person. What are you doing to investing in it? Where do you find the excitement, the passion in what you're doing? As Rabbi Taz continues counting days, creating time, we should not be passively riding time. We should be building our lives, causing time to become real. Passively drifting through time allows time inexorably to dissolve life. Building life by building its elements consciously and actively in Kedusha causes time to transcend into eternity and ourselves to become one with that great music. This is what life is about. Life is about Shabbos being at the head of the festivals. Life is about Shabbos, which is Kedusha, holiness par excellence, which is spirituality par excellence, which is the whole message of what the festivals in life is about, that we are in God's hands. This message has to have an aspect of Mikra Kodesh, of the initiative of man. If not, time will wash over man. If one wants to grow as a spiritual person, one needs to really be able to imbibe this message in one's life. What are you doing, whether it's in relationships with fellow man or relationships with God? What are you doing to create a positive situation? What are you doing to take the spiritual messages around the person and be able to inculcate them in one's life? Life is about not being only passive. Even Shabbos, the most passive of time, which happens every 7 days, has to have the active quality as well, has to have the initiative in order to form a bond and a partnership, the messianic era of union together with God. And this is a spiritual message, that life is about taking a step forward. Life is about not waiting for things to happen to us, but for us to create things to happen and for us to be alert and awake to take the experiences of life and allow them to affect us, allow them to change us, not only intellectually, but emotionally as well.